This is Dolores Cannon, and welcome again to the Metaphysical Hour. And we're going to be on for another hour tonight, and we have another special guest. All right. Tonight, my guest is Justine Alessi, and she's one of the authors that my company has published. And she is a publisher's dream.
Thank you.
Because she has gone out and promoted her books and been doing lectures and book signings. And she's willing to do anything we ask her. And if there are any publishers out there, they know this is the kind of an author you really want to have on board.
That is so kind. Thank you, Dolores.
Okay. But Justine is a tarot reader, but it's not just any tarot reader. I consider her a master at her art. And her book that she wrote that we published is called The Rebirth of the Oracle. And it's bringing the tarot into the modern world. Because as everyone knows, the tarot has been around for thousands of years. But most of the definitions refer to the olden times. Now, she has rewritten and brought it up to the modern times. And Justine, didn't you say you worked on this for about 30 years?
20, about, well, almost 20 years, yeah, until I finally wrote it all down. What I had done is it was a hobby, and I was a librarian prior to being a tarot reader, and it was a hobby, and I just started to notice things, and it was like a gift that was given to me. And I thought, somebody has to write this down. And a little voice in my head kept saying, it better be you, because nobody else is going to. So I did, and I actually brought the meetings into the 21st century, because some of the older tarot books would have a card like the Seven of Wands, for instance, and it would say Civil War. Well, that doesn't apply to today. You know, we're not in Civil War. So I made it more meaningful. What I brought it up into is like war, not war, but conflict among a select small group, like a workplace or something like that,
yeah,
rather than Civil War. Also including alternative lifestyles, internet dating, because we had to have cards for them. So I started to notice the cards when people were asking me specific questions, and I thought, well, that'll make sense. And it does. It's been very well received.
So you have just kind of come across this by yourself?
Absolutely. All the work in Rebirth of the Oracle, all of the definition is mine. It's from doing thousands of card readings, and I started to notice patterns. Not only in the people cards, which you know, Dolores, are my biggest focus, but in the minor arcana, which are the cards of day-to-day living, I noticed patterns, and I thought, okay, if that keeps appearing when somebody's asking me, how am I going to meet somebody, which will be the Eight of Wands, I have, you know, your direct introduction by a friend in the workplace. When I see the Eight of Wands, that's got to be internet romance, because it's arrows of love through the air. Does that make sense?
Oh. Okay, I see the connection there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, before we get into more of that, do you want to tell them, the people listening, about yourself, about your own history?
Well, it's not very exciting, really. I was born in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, in 1949. My parents were Anthony and Justine Macy, and I grew up in the suburb, well, first in the city, and then in the suburb with my three sisters, Jeannie, Janet, and Joanne. Typical growing up in the 50s kind of childhood, and I married young to my husband, Robert. Bob's 68 now, and I'm 57, and
yeah,
we've been married for 37 years.
Yeah.
And I have two children and one grandchild.
Uh-huh.
And I'm a mom, a grandma. We've lived in the same house. We live in Ohio. We've lived in the same house for 30 years. We're kind of the normal American family, you know. There's nothing very exciting about us.
But they always say, what is normal anyway?
Yeah, well, I guess as normal as you could be, huh?
But you started out just doing the tarot as a hobby?
Well, what happened was I was a librarian, and I live in a little town. It's about 60 miles outside of Cleveland. It's called North Kingsville. And there's a public library here, and I worked in there since my daughter will be 34 this week, and she was 1 and a half, so whatever, that would be almost 33 years.
Yeah.
And I worked there, and I also worked in another library a longer time, but when she was young, I started to work part-time. And one day, probably it was in the 1980, I believe it was 1984, a young man who came in the library, he had a kind of a difficult upbringing, and he took to hanging out in libraries, you know, not a lot of kids will do that, and I always felt sorry for him because he didn't have any shoes on. I mean, he had shoes, but his feet were all cramped, and he used to tell me his feet hurt. So going against every, I suppose, rule in the world, I bought him a pair of shoes. I felt sorry for him. And he kind of clung on to me after that for a while, and he brought me my first deck of cards, and he laid them on my desk, and he said, "You can do these."
Oh, you hadn't seen them before that?
Never. And So I kind of, you know, had heard of them, but, you know, I grew up in the 60s, but no, I wasn't real big into anything metaphysical. I was just your normal Italian Catholic girl, you know, and working in, you know, the steady job and going home when my kids were home and work part-time, the husband worked. Like I say, the typical family. Well,
yeah, I've been
typical.
There on that, so we've all been through that part.
Yes. And so I just, you know, he gave me the cards, and I was like, I know what these are. And it was a familiarity, I should say, more than a knowledge. I just felt what they are. And I could read them. I don't know why, but I could read them. And to the place where it was almost a little bit of frightening to me at the time, I was in my late 30s, and I was like, wow, how come I know this?
Because you hadn't had any classes or anything.
Nothing. What happened the day he brought him, one of the mothers, I was doing a story time group, and one of the mothers came in, her name was Cheryl Gray, and she had twins, little kids, and she said, she said, "Oh, tarot cards." And I said, "Yeah." I said, "Do you know anything about them?" She goes, "Sure, let me show you how to lay them out."
Oh, okay.
And she said to me, she said, "There's a book called The Tarot of the Bohemians," which at the time may well have been one of the few tarot books in existence. And I got it, and I read that, and that was the only book I ever read. And she told me, she showed me, we were sitting in her kitchen one day. She said, they'll talk to you. Just let them talk. She was a Native American Indian.
Yeah.
And it was true. And they talk. They absolutely, I don't mean, you know, Dolores, not like I have voices in my head, but they really, thoughts roll out of the cards into my mind. And they're seldom wrong, but they're seldom as ever wrong. Tarot today has to be, my goal is actually to bring the tarot back to what it was originally meant to be, which is a tool of enlightenment. My goal is to erase the stigma of the charlatanism and the carnival atmosphere to be
all of that, you know.
Well, yeah, I want to tell people, you know, there's so many people out there who have destroyed what I consider a beautiful tool of enlightenment. It is. It can tell you anything you want to know. All you have to do is ask it.
Uh-huh.
And it appeals to the subconscious. And over the years, you know, I'm sure, I mean, I live in a small town, and we've got people who get arrested bunko because they tell people, you know, if they buy this rock that they picked up on Lake Erie, because it's where I live, it'll change their life. Well, that's not what a tarot reader does. You have to understand, and you have to be very compassionate.
Yeah, we get those things in the mail all the time, you know.
Right.
To be lucky stuff if you send something back in. Of course, they always want money.
Right, and that's not what tarot is about. Tarot, actually, to read cards, what the tarot will do, it will tell you the way your life is going to go in any given situation if you just leave it alone. However, realizing the tarot is based on the tree of life, you may be at a place on the tree of life that you don't want to be. You have absolute power to change it because the strongest force in the universe is free will. So if you're in a place, say, I get a lot of relationship questions, and I'll have people who repeatedly are in negative relationships or won't get out of them. And my journey is not to tell them to get out of their relationship, but rather to say, if you stay in this relationship, this is what will happen. However, if you leave it, this is what will happen. They have to pick. You, as a reader, you cannot choose for people.
Yeah, but that's one thing. You know, I know, too. I know something about the tarot, but I also know you're not supposed to read a lot of negativity either.
Oh, absolutely not. One of the first things when I teach tarot classes, I say that everything's in the delivery, everything. And if you look at Rebirth of the Oracle, especially like people, are, you know, they worry about card readings. And the first time I do anybody's cards, I sort of have like a canned speech. But I want them to feel comfortable, and what I say is, the first time I do anybody's cards, I like to explain them. These are tarot cards. You will control this reading by asking questions. When you say you will control the reading, they're immediately put at ease because I'm not going to jump out and say something awful. If you ask me, I'll tell you the truth. I will always tell you the truth. But if you don't want to talk about whatever it is, I'm not going to talk about it. And then you say, these cards will tell you the way your life is going to go in any given situation if you leave it alone. However, you can always change things. The tarot will give you the path. You can ask me anything you like about yourself and those closest to you regarding love, health, work, money, career, travel, anything at all. At that point, I pull out the two cards that frighten people. One is death and one is the devil.
Yeah,
I'm not God. I don't know who's going to die, and neither is anybody else. And I tell my clients, if you encounter a reader who says you're going to die, get up and walk out for two reasons. One, they are assuming the power of God, and that isn't who they are. And secondly, they don't know anything about the tarot. What the death card really is an event. And it's an event that has such a strong energy to it that it will change the four energies of life that are defined by the tarot, which are your day-to-day activities, your finances, your personal relationships, and your empowerment. Therefore, marriage, divorce, having kids, when they grow up, moving across the country, changing careers. If you won the Mega Millions tonight, it would be a death card. That's what it is. It's nothing else. It will change everything.
Well, you know, the way I was taught to read the tarot, too, is that the death card means the death of a situation.
Right, because you're going through, and it's a big situation. I always tell people, like, if you're a nurse at Hospital A and go to be a nurse at Hospital B, that's not a death card. However, if you're a nurse at Hospital A and decide you're going to go to the police academy and become a detective, that's a death card.
Because yeah,
that's that big of a change.
Yeah, and a lot of people have things in their life, mm-hmm. their situations, and it's the death of a situation and the rebirth of something totally
exactly.
new.
Exactly. Something new. Something like that begins again.
Uh-huh.
And the other one's the devil. A lot of fundamentalists will say things like, oh, you know, you're evil, the tarot's evil. Well, I'm not evil, and neither is the tarot. It's the devil card that it is. What happened to the best of my ability to study the tarot? Because, you know, all of it was so lost. The belief is that the cards made their way into Europe during the Renaissance. Well, in Italy and France, they didn't have a word to translate the hieroglyphic of death and the devil. They did the best they could. Now in English we have the word for the death card, which would be transformation, and for the devil, which would be bondage. The devil,
bondage, okay.
Bondage. We're bound to. The devil is what we do to ourselves. We are self-imposed bondage. What we do to ourselves to prevent our own growth. I know I'm old enough, and you know probably many listeners out there are old enough to remember somebody saying, oh, he or she is battling his or her own demons. Well, you remember that saying?
Yeah, uh-huh.
And it's basically what the devil card is. And what I found in all my research in writing Rebirth of the Oracle that 90% of people's devil card is anxiety and fear. Anxiety and fear holds more people back from becoming what they could or want to be than any combination of physical problems. Greed, anger, envy, guilt. Guilt is huge today. I see it in my clientele, especially among the very young. They'll be like, well, I want to get out of this, or I want this relationship, but if I do, he'll kill himself. And they're very bound by guilt. And I'm saying not as a negative thing to say, but so many, you know, with everybody having to work, a lot of kids are exposed to relationships energies well before they have the maturity to be.
Oh, yeah, that's happening to a lot of them.
Right. And then...
But, you know, in my work, too, I've come up with this time and time again. I call them crossroads or nexus points. Everyone has these in their life. You
mm-hmm.
come to a point, you could go one way or another way. You could
right.
make many different decisions. And you know, no matter what decision you made, your life would be totally different. And you put the energy into which way you want to go.
And that exactly. That's actually a better definition than mine as a devil, because what you're saying is you have the choice, but so many people are bound by their fear or anxiety. They don't make any choice at all. They stay in that situation.
Yeah, they don't realize they have brought this into their life.
Right.
That way they can, you know, I tell them, you create your reality. And if you realize you create the things in your life, then you can make changes and you can uncreate the things you don't want.
That's correct. And, you know, the seven deadly sins, I can't quite remember them all. I'm getting a little fading on that. But greed, anger, envy, those are huge today as well. And another big one I get is resentment. And I think that's why I was so, like, focused on writing the tarot for the 21st century, because one of the biggest ones is resentment. And where I'm seeing that, I'd say 90% of the time, is in divorcing couples. And, you know, the game that everybody plays and who's going to hurt who and who's going to take this and who's going to grab these kids up. And what they're doing is they're just creating this ton of negativity. Well, as a reader, and I believe all readers, if you want a reader, go to a truth sayer, you know, that will say to you, listen, and not in a harsh way, everything's in the delivery, listen, what you're doing here is you're creating all this negativity. Think how this is affecting your children. Think what they're learning, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people have actually changed direction in their life due to a tarot reading, if you have a reader that knows what he or she is doing.
In a way, you're really like a psychologist, you know, just because, you know, it's the same thing I do. We work with people to try to understand their problems.
Well, you know, there was a radio show on in Cleveland, gosh, it must have been about 10 years ago, and it was a very, I can't remember who it was some psychiatrist, and he said, for many of the problems that people seek psychiatry or psychology for, go to a good reader, because, and I actually have, therapists who refer people to me.
Uh-huh.
Because they can't say, I can say whatever I want because I'm not, you know, and I was, of course, they know I would never, ever hurt anybody, but they can't say, you know, get your head out of the sand and get on with your life. They have to drag them through. I can say that, you know.
Okay. They have to be more tactful.
Exactly, and you know me, I'm not too tactful.
But, you know, I know what you mean because, they have to do it in a roundabout way, or they're not even supposed to give a lot of advice.
Right. They always say, how do you feel? Well, it gets to the place where, you know, somebody should just be telling them. And I actually have quite a few in my practice. I mean, my practice encompasses every, I would say, every occupation from, you know, from professional people, regular, you know, everyday, hardworking, you know, down-to-earth people.
Yeah.
I don't do children. I don't do that.
I don't either. I don't work with children.
No, I think it's too influential, don't you think?
I figure they're not ready for it, you know.
Did you ever, though, come across a child that was, like, real tuned into another lifetime?
Yeah, but I just don't like to work with the children on the hypnosis because I never know how it's going to affect them.
Right. Well,
and
do you think
to mess up their reality.
Yeah, well, this is going off my tarot back to you, but I just have this question. Like, young children, I notice a lot of my clients will tell me things like they're, like, 3 and 4 years old and they're talking to spirits and stuff. I believe that because I've seen it.
Yeah.
And then, like, when they're 6, they forget all about it.
Yeah, that happens with the hypnosis, too. The people would come in and talk about their children, you know, remembering things. Like they say, remember when I was the mommy and you were the little girl?
Uh-huh.
And a lot of them do see spirits that have passed on, and they try to tell people about them. But, yeah, by the time they get about 6 or so, then for some reason, real life, I guess you would say, kicks in, and they push it all aside. That doesn't mean it's not real.
Oh, no, I agree with that. But I just wondered if you'd ever really encountered, because you're a regressionist, I encounter it all the time. People ask me that all the time, and I say, sure, why not, you know?
Yeah.
But I've noticed a pattern.
I encourage the parents to listen to their kids and not tell them, oh, no, that you're crazy, you can't talk like that. I tell them, encourage them to listen to them, and because their children probably are really seeing these things and telling the truth.
And, you know, look how many little kids have that imaginary friend, and maybe they really do.
Yeah.
You know?
One of my daughters had an imaginary friend.
Really?
Oh, there wasn't anything wrong with that. You know, they do outgrow it.
But I'm wondering, do you think that could be from another lifetime? Because, I mean, some of them are so adamant. My kids didn't have one, but my sister's kids did. And it was like they really knew that person was there. I mean, that was like a real person.
Oh, yeah,
my niece used to set the table for hers and everything.
Yeah. Well, with mine, it was interesting because my first daughter was the only child, and she was like about 3 or 4, and we'd be walking down the street, and she'd say, "Now take Julie's hand." She called the little friend Julie.
Aww.
And she could see her, and she could talk to her, and she wanted to, her to sit at the table when we're eating. And, you know, like she always said, that hold her hand, Mommy, while we cross the street. And
aww.
It was very real to her. So I got to know Julie so well that when I had my second daughter, we named her Julie.
And she's
yeah, and after that, you know, my oldest daughter didn't see the imaginary friend anymore. So who knows?
Well, she could have been maybe the two of them were spirits in another lifetime, and they came back to be together.
It could have been the spirit of the second daughter was there already and, you know, waiting to be born, and then the oldest daughter could see her. Who knows?
Well, just for your listeners, FYI, Dolores has wonderful, wonderful daughters, and I've gotten pretty close to Julie, and she is a little will-o'-the-wisp spirit, isn't she?
But, you know, that's one explanation anyway.
Sure, and it makes all kinds of sense. What made you just named it that way because Nancy wanted her to be named that, or you just thought, I'm going to?
No, because I got so used to hearing the name.
Oh, yeah, it made it a lot easier, huh?
Yeah, but I had one man. He was man lived out here in the country, and he wasn't exposed to a whole lot. He was telling me that his daughter had an imaginary friend, and he said, I think she's crazy. Oh, that's not the way to look at it like that. Because a lot of kids have that. It doesn't mean they're crazy. They can just see more than we as adults have shut all these things out. You know?
Metaphysical people, you know, we look at people differently. Many times I've told people, especially kids that have been labeled like, oh, you're, what's that word they call them, ADD. I say, you're not ADD. You're just different. You know, people don't. They don't realize the harm labeling does. I'm pretty much of a liberal when it comes to all that stuff, and I love the Indigo Children. Have you read it?
Oh, yeah. I know some people who have written those books.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But, yeah.
I forgot who I was talking to. You know everybody.
I don't agree with that either, and I certainly don't agree with putting them on Ritalin. That, to me, is horrible.
But there's just, you know, people think because you're outside the box that you're, that there's something wrong with you. I remember, you know, all my life, I always knew what was going to happen. I did. I would get these feelings, and they were very distinct in my solar plexus, and I could always tell what was going to happen. And I'll never forget, because I was married very young. I was 19 when I got married. And one time when I was 25, Bob and I were doing, we were putting up pictures on the wall or something, and I was telling him something, and he looked at me real oddly, and he says, "Do you think everybody's like you?" And I said, "Yes." I didn't know, because when you grow up sheltered like we did then, you just assume everybody does the same thing as you. And only at 25 did I realize I wasn't like everybody else, that everybody couldn't see into the future. I could always see into the future.
Maybe this is why it made it so easy for you to do the tarot.
I believe it because, you know, quite truthfully, I don't really need the cards. I use them because they're a wonderful illustration so that it puts a barrier between myself and my client.
Well, there
and
are
I
tools.
Can get
you know, there are, all of these things are just tools anyway.
Right. And then you get all the specifics. If you read the cards, you know, as far as looking at them, you can actually pull out a card and say to somebody, see this card? I'll use the Seven of Swords, for instance. In the Universal Weight deck, it pictures a man kind of looking over his shoulder, and he's got, you know, like he's kind of slipping away. It looks like he's stealing.
Yeah, that card to me has always been hard to interpret.
And now, see, to me, it's one of my favorites because you interpret the swords three ways. You interpret them physically, mentally, spiritually. Physically, somebody's going to steal from you or vice versa. Mentally, somebody's like taking, you know, taking your power or taking, like at work, say you work for the boss and you come up with everything and he takes all the credit like that.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And spiritually, you're allowing people to steal your spirituality, to lead you down a path or doing it to yourself, actually. And
yeah.
So there's a lot of interpretations on the sword cards. And what I can do then, if we're saying, if I say this person is taking away all your power, I'll pull that Seven of Swords, and especially using the Universal Weight deck, which is what we illustrated the book with, is you can see it's a theft card. I mean, it'll make sense to you. And then you look what's next to it and what the story's telling you, and it's amazing what you learn about people. And a tool for me as well as for them, because when it's laid out, I'm able to do time frames and descriptions, etc. And
you know, I wouldn't be surprised if you might have had a past life as a gypsy or someone who used the tarot and were able to see the future because, you, like you said, it came so easy for you.
Well, I had this vision one time. It was the first time I opened the deck. I don't think I told you this. The first time that I opened a deck of cards, I was flashed away from this library, and I was in a white place. All I know is it was white. And I looked down, and you know how when you sit, you can only see your lap? That's all I could see of myself. And I had a dress on, a long dress, and it was kind of a very coarse, color. It was a tightly woven cloth, but it was like a coarse color, like a purplish that's not like we would have today.
Yeah.
And there was a table in front of me, and it was very ornate, and there was two golden chairs, but I couldn't see anything but my own little spot there. And there were cards on the table, but they were not my cards, not like what I had. They had little symbols on them.
Yeah.
So I knew my name, and it was Rhema. And I'm like, okay. And I flashed out of that picture, and I thought, what the heck was that? It was almost frightening to me. But, you know, I went with it being that I'm like
so
I am.
You weren't used to having those kind of experiences.
Right. Well, I told you. You know, I told you about that. I asked you about that one time when we were talking. And you said probably out of a past life. Well, interestingly, I thought, well, okay, let me see what I can find out. And I put the word Rhema into a search engine. And it's an Egyptian word for compassion, but it's also a Jewish word for the spoken word of God.
Hmm.
So I had no idea. And then, you know, there's just a lot of things that have happened to me that have little touches of a past life. But maybe that was one of them because, I don't know, I mean, everybody tells me when I read their cards, and I've read so many of them, I'm just a natural at it. I just know what they mean. Without even blinking an eye, I know what they're saying.
Yeah, because but becoming that natural to you, I found that in a lot of people, when any kind of a talent, just suddenly they just know how to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, I've done sessions. We trace it back to past lives because they've done it before, and that's why it's so natural to them, because they've already experienced it.
And, you know, what I also find kind of interesting is I was always an attention deficit child. I was intelligent, but I was bored very easily.
That's what I tell their parents. All it is they're bored.
Right.
There's something else to do that'll challenge them.
And when I worked in the library, I mean, I did it for 20-some years, and I liked it, but I didn't love it. I love to read cards because every client is different, all the stories are different, and it's actually almost like I'm in it with them. And I've had some clients, I mean, they've been coming to me for years. You build like any business, you know, like what you do, whatever we call what we do. We build a following.
Yeah.
But I wanted to talk, if you don't mind, about the court cards. Is that okay?
Well, I had a few questions first that
okay.
I wanted to bring in here before I forgot about them
okay.
anyway. But let's go into a little bit into the history of the cards. And now the way I understand it, they go way back to Egyptian times, don't they?
Well, that has been very disputed. I believe it. The problem has been the Da Vinci Code. In fact, I was in California with Margaret Starbird, who wrote The Woman with the Alabaster Jar, which is the basis for the Da Vinci Code, the story of Jesus being married to Magdalene. Well, there was a tarot deck from Italy, probably maybe 14th century, and I can't say the word because it's a long Italian word. I think it's Gringioni deck. And
yeah.
She goes through it in her one thesis, which is the tarot trumps in the Holy Grail. She relates each of the major cards to a step to the step in the life of this marriage. And she says that the tarot is the catechism for the Grailists, who were the people that believed that Jesus was married to Mary Magdalene, and it was hidden within the cards. My theory, and I mean, everything's a theory, but when you read her book, yeah, it makes perfect sense. But
yeah.
Looking at today's decks, my cards don't have anything to do with Jesus and Mary Magdalene. They have to do with us now, today. My thought was that perhaps, you know, they did come from, it's very shady because, or very cloudy rather, because the Great Library in Alexandria burned down.
Yeah.
And all the wisdom was held there. So everything is a guess. There's no proving any of it. However, I believe, truly, because of that Rhema experience I had with those symbols, and just because of, I just know, does that make sense? That,
yeah.
That there were probably been tarot cards around for, centuries, as a tool of enlightenment or as an oracle, but I would believe my thought would be, and I don't know if I'm right, that perhaps the Grailists did indeed create a deck of their own so that they could hide their message in it, and it would just sort of get lost in the masses, you know?
Yeah, but I do know that during the Inquisition, that's what they did.
Oh, yeah, and during the Inquisition, I would have been burned at the stake, because anybody prior to the Inquisition, and a lot of this was, the Roman Catholic Church was, you know, it's political. It was all that in those days, you know, the Crusades and all that. And anybody that could, prior to the Inquisition, people who do what I did had a patron saint. At the Inquisition, the church built, I can't remember, 6 million women or something like that for practicing these arts, like that we were a cult. Well, you know, I've met you, you've met me. We're obviously not a cult about anything. We're just regular women, you know? But we have a gift, and that's the key. We have a gift.
Mm-hmm. But what I've heard, though, during the Inquisition, they did use some of the tarot cards to hide messages in
right.
them.
That's what Margaret Starbird says. That's her whole thesis.
They used them. Sometimes they would pass a card to someone, and it would be a message that mm-hmm. would be with the card, you know.
Right.
This way they were able to do it without being noticed.
And I agree with that, but I still kind of have my belief that they did come from the Egyptians. And, yes, there was probably decks created for different ideas, like the Magdalene theory. I agree with that. But
yes.
I also think that if all the cards was to talk about the marriage of Jesus to Magdalene, I don't think that's what they are. I believe.
Well, I don't think so either.
No.
In the work I've done, you know, I did the Jesus and the Essenes book.
Right, I love that
I
book.
I also printed the book called The Essenes
mm-hmm.
by this couple in England. Well, what we found was that Mary Magdalene was actually an Egyptian priestess, and she was trained in Egypt and all of the mysteries and the secrets.
And
so
they call her, you know, the Black Madonna. They say her skin was dark and swarthy. If you, you know, there's so many, yeah. We'll never really know, but I'm with you on it. I think it's, you know, that's that part of it.
That's why I believe that she would have had, if she, you know, the knowledge of the cards going all the way back, because they were taught these kind of secrets.
Right, because they were the high priestesses in the temple, and they had the gift. From what I had learned, now there's a lot of people out there trying to disprove it, but, you know, I'm long past the point, you know, I think as we get older, and I don't care, you know what I mean? To me, wherever they came from,
yeah.
I know what they do now, and what they do now is they open the Akashic Record. I absolutely know that, because so many times I will see things in a person that I have no way of having any idea. I know the Akashic Record is open through the tarot.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to either guide them, you know, into perhaps it's from a past life, because Buddha always says, if you have a problem, just, you know, meditate and say, what did I do before when I had this problem? Because our lives, you know, well, you're the one, of course, you're the expert on past lives. We've had these problems before.
Yeah.
And we know how to fix them.
Yeah, that's why I try to help them find the answers.
Right.
But I did have one past life, it's going to be in a book that I'm going to write someday, where a woman went back to where she was a gypsy, and it was back in the 1700s, which
mm-hmm.
isn't that long ago. But in those days, they made their own deck, and they had to draw the symbols and color them. And they said this way they put their own power into their deck, because it was very personal that way.
And people have asked me that, are you going to create a deck? Well, I, you know, you said we have our talents. I can do two things. I can read tarot cards and I can cook. Aside from that, I can't draw a straight line. So I don't think I could ever draw a deck. But, but I find most of the decks seem to be based on the 1920s Rider Waite. That seems to be the one that people just respond to. It's a good teaching deck for anybody that's listening out there. If you want to learn the cards, the pictures on them are just so wide open, and they talk to you.
Uh-huh.
And they're the ones I use to teach, because after you learn the Rider-Waite or the Universal Waite deck, they're the same. The Rider-Waite and the Universal Waite have the same pictures. However, the Rider-Waite only is colored with four colors, and the Universal Waite is colored with many colors. They're just brighter and prettier. That's why I like them.
Okay.
But they have messages in them, and the message is the same. That's why, I mean, it's an oracle. if you and I or anybody out there, we all chose one card and looked at it, we would all arrive at similar conclusions. It's the way it is.
Uh-huh.
It's an oracle.
But, you know, before we go on to the other part, there's another card that a lot of people have a negative feeling for, and that's the Hanged Man.
Right.
And, you know, they always show it in the movies when their gypsy is doing the reading, and these are supposed to be very evil cards, the Death, the Devil, and the Hanged Man.
Again, the connotation.
That's not a bad card, is it?
No. That's a connotation from the Inquisition. Basically, what the Hanged Man is if you look at it, the positioning of the Hanged Man, during the medieval times, the feet were actually symbolic of the genitals.
Oh.
And the Hanged Man is upside down, and he's hung by his foot. And what they're saying is that's like part of the torture of the Inquisition and things like that.
Yeah.
And the positioning, all that, it actually goes back to the Inquisition. However, what the Hanged Man really means, as far as, I mean, where the pictures come from, you know, I've heard it all, I've read it all, it's a stagnation energy. The Hanged Man is a reversed man who is his right foot, rather, I mean, his right foot is hung and his left foot is crossed behind him.
Yeah.
And he has a halo around his head. And basically, you can read that card as you are in a stagnation point. You have to make a choice. You have to move forward. You're tied, but you have around your head, you have this golden halo. You have the
he's smiling.
Right. And you have the intuition, and you have the knowledge, and you have the power, but you're doing it to yourself, again, much like the devil, the Hanged Man, the devil, in disempowerment that we do to ourselves. I think it's all self-involved, you know?
Yeah, I always interpret it as waiting for something.
Exactly. It's like a limbo card. You're just waiting for something to happen.
Yeah.
But all readers have their own interpretations, but what I found to be the most interesting is that everybody kind of ends up arriving at the same conclusion. And I just love that because it just proves over and over again that it's an oracle.
Mm-hmm. That's the main thing, though, that I stay away from negativity also.
Well, yeah, because your energy, I mean, you know, you have that Queen of Cups energy, which is the psychic, the tuned into the universe, the very love, the real, the gold energy, the blue, the aura. You have, like, the energy that you don't want to hurt anybody, and you won't hurt anybody, and you don't want anyone else. You just want the world to be loving. That's what you feel like, and that's the Queen of Cups, which is actually the dedication page in Rebirth of the Oracle, because Queens of Cups are the ones who have these gifts, or not we all have them, but who use them.
Yeah, because that's what I tell people. Everyone has psychic abilities. It's not something weird that just come to a few like they show in the movies. Everybody has this. We just choose not to use them.
I agree with you, and I think a lot of people are afraid of them.
Uh-huh.
And I think due to the fact that there was so much control and tyranny by various religious groups, because of our psychic development, was held down. But now we're in a new age. We're, you know, I mean, I am still I'm still Christian, I'm still spiritual, but I also believe that I have unlocked a portion of my mind. You have, many people have, and other people look at us, you know, like, wow, what's wrong with them? There's nothing wrong with us. I think we're just a jump ahead as far as using the next corner of the mind, you know?
Well, that's why the one I had on my program last week, and you will meet him when you come to the conference, was Father Pat. He was a Catholic priest for 18 years before he left the church. And he was trying to say the same things, is that you can combine religion with metaphysics, the spirituality, and it's like a bridge. You can do it, and you don't lose anything. Either.
A lot of what I found, and I mean, I don't know if this is just peculiar to the area that I live in, which is, you know, the Midwest, but a lot of people who are into metaphysics are they're all very good people. I have to say unequivocally, all of them are good people.
Yeah, I haven't met anyone that's bad unless
they're many of them are lapsed Catholics, and I have noticed that.
Yeah.
So they have the background of, you know, what we were taught. Strong, you know, belief in the beauty of the Virgin Mary and, you know, the saints and all those things, which go all the way back to the pagan times. They go to Isis, they go to the gods and goddesses, and they're brought up into Christianity. But I think that what's happening now is the doors are opening wide, and everybody's like, everybody that I know who is like I am has a deep spirituality, would never want to hurt anybody, which I think is the greatest, you know, love one another. But we just open a new door. You know, you've been doing it for years.
Yeah, the main thing is karma, you know, not to hurt anyone.
Right.
And, you know, to do the very best you can.
Right.
Oh, before I want you to go into the card, quote card cards, but also remember I'm going to have to watch the clock because I'll have to stop at a certain time.
Okay, I'm looking. I have a digital cross me. It says 8:39.
Okay, before we do, I would like you to tell people about the man that, I don't know if you want to mention his name or not, the man who you did the reading for, and then he won the $1 million on the, you know, who wants to be a millionaire.
Sure, I'll be glad to tell him. What it was, his name is Bob Essig, and he doesn't mind. Actually, his blurb's on the back of my book. And Bob is my daughter's age, about 34, married to his wife's name is Stacy. They had a little girl. And he used to come to get his cards read, and he worked as an IT person at University Hospitals of Cleveland. And he would come and get his cards read with his wife, and he always had this Ace of Pentacles directly in front of him. And when I did the numbers with my mind, which I couldn't go into over the phone, I always said to him, this was several years ago, probably when he was about 30, I said, Bobby, before you reach the age of 35, you're going to be a millionaire. And he'd look at me and laugh, and he'd go, how? I said, I don't know, but it has nothing to do with luck, nor is it inheritance. And I never think about TV shows. Who thinks of that?
Yeah.
I said, all you have to do is look for it. It's right in front of you. And of course, he got on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, and when he came home, he said I was one of the first people that he called. He said, as he sat there pondering should he go for the million-dollar question, he remembered his reading, and he was at the time 33 or 34, and he said, I'm just going to go for it because that's what the card said, and of course, he won it.
Uh-huh.
And the way he won it, the irony of that was that he his last question had something to do with, like, what was 1992, was it the year of the dragon or the monkey or whatever, you know, in the Chinese astrology? Well,
yeah.
He had no clue. So he phoned a friend who was his father-in-law. His father-in-law's brother had been to a Chinese restaurant that day, and it was on that paper placemat. And he was there when Bob called, and he knew the answer. Isn't that something?
And well, you know, a lot of it was trust, too, that he decided to go ahead and trust and go
right
with it.
And truthfully, do I think many people are going to be millionaires? No, I don't think that. I very rarely see cards like that, but it was just, it kept being there. And when I start seeing it reading after reading, I'm thinking there's more to this. Trevor Vines was another one. I don't know if any of your listeners out there have ever heard of Trevor, but Trevor's very big in motocross. He's a superstar in the extreme sports of, like, the jumping and the tricks and all that.
Yeah.
And I've known him for a long time, and he was probably about 20, and he would come get his cards read, and he always had the cards of fame. And anybody that's out there listening, if you see the Ace of Pentacles next to the Chariot upright on the first house, you have got a famous person or a person who has that ability. I see him on him constantly, and I said, Trevor, what are you doing? He had a little extreme sports store in Conneaut, Ohio, which is down the road from us, about 8 miles. I said, and he was working construction. I said, you have the cards of fame. Go after it. So he'll tell everybody, you know, to this day we remain friends, and he says, I just got tired of listening to her complain. He said, so I put my dirt bike on the back of my truck, and I went to L.A. Well, he's one of the top in the world. He's like one of the original motocross. I forget what they exactly call it. I'd have to look on my book. Freestyle. That's it. I couldn't think of the word. Freestyle motocross riders. And he invented a lot of things, and he's still there. He does the X Games and travels the world. And he always gives credit to the tarot, and he comes and sees me regularly. Because he wants to make sure things are in order.
Yeah. But, you know, when you get something like that, like with the Bob, and then they keep saying they're going to be a millionaire, do you ever question that and think, well, no, this is impossible?
Nope. One of the biggest things about being a Queen of Cups, which we are both, is that we believe in magic and we believe in everything. And I'd see something like that. It's so rare that I would see something like that. Most people end up with, like, in their lifetime, as far as money goes,
yeah,
there's kind of two, I want to call two positionings. One would be the Four of Pentacles, which is kind of like you have to hold on tight to your money. You know, you live pay to pay. It's a little difficult, but you get by. And the other one, which I see pretty much equally, is the Six of Pentacles, which is enough money to spend money freely, enough money to give money away. That doesn't mean that you can endow a hospital, but it means if your kids need $1,000, you have it, okay? That's where many people end up. But he consistently had the ace, consistently had the ace. And it was directly in front of him. So I knew that the time frame was less than 5 years or less, you know? So
but
that's
you learn to trust anyway in these things and know mm-hmm. what's real. And well, that's one thing I do want to say, too, before we get too far. You know, we are going to have the Transformation Conference coming up, and this is the first one that my publishing company has done where we are going to be featuring our authors.
It's so exciting, especially Gandhi.
Well, I'll have more about it before we close, but this is the 3rd and 4th of June in Fayetteville, Arkansas. And Justine is going to be there as one of the speakers, and one of her specialties is mingling with the audience and talking to people and telling them what court card there are, and you give a little mini reading with people, don't you?
Everybody. I learned over the years, all I have to do is look at your eyes, and I will know which suit of the tarot suits you. And if I look into somebody's eyes, and the eyes are filled with compassion and this, let me, you know, talk to me, tell me, that's a Queen of Cups every time. If I look into somebody's eyes and you see, I will take care of everybody. I'll take care of you. You feel safe. That's always a wand energy. You look and you see the spark of creativity and intelligence, and that's a pentacle. And you see that little glimmer of adventure and that little bit of boundary setting that goes with it, that it's antithesis of adventure. You have a sword. And I'll be honest with you, I've probably thousands of times, I can do it on a bus. I'm never wrong. And if you question it, then you look to the next place from the eyes as you look at the mouth. And the mouth will tell you everything. That's how I do it. And so far, well, you know, we were together at a trade show.
Yeah, I've seen you work, and you're fantastic.
Thank you.
But what about the mouth? You mean they're smiling?
Well, yes,
or?
The mouth is very important because a lot of times you'll see like a set to a mouth, and you'll know if the set says sword or if it says pentacle. Queen of Cups, which you and I are both, so I can do us real well. We have the kind of a mouth that we look happy. We look like we're happy, even when we're not. You know what I mean? That's always the Queen of Cups. We like want people to feel good, that we're the feel-good queens, and we try to help them find their path. And sometimes on women who are like Queens of Swords, for instance, you'll find a kind of a stern set to the mouth. There's no nonsense energy to their mouth.
Yeah.
But usually, I mean, I would say 90% of the time I get it on the eyes. I can tell. All I have to do is look at the eyes and the mouth. That's all. Because it belies, you know, like I had done a woman when I was in Hollywood. I was doing a lecture at the Bodhi Tree. It was a lovely woman. Her name was Celeste, and she was very beautiful and very well-groomed. Well, because you know the pentacle people are always very neat about themselves and they write nice things, you'd look at her and think she was a Queen of Pentacles until you look in her eyes and you know right off the bat she's a Queen of Cups.
Oh.
So I demonstrated that for my workshop. I said, what does everybody think she is? I said, no, look at her eyes. She's not a Queen of Pentacles. They say Queen of Cups. That's right. Because there's that softness and that kind of like an invitation to talk. That's the Queen of Cups.
But you know, a lot of people, the readers might not be able to pick up on that.
I think it's actually
subtle.
A gift that I have. It's a gift.
These little subtle things that you would pick up about people.
Yeah, it is honestly a gift. And I can pretty much say I've never been wrong, not yet. And I've done it thousands of times, and people are like, wow. It's
mm-hmm. Because
their
I've seen you work a crowd, and you do it so fast. You know, there's no time to even think about it. You just
well, you know,
come out with it.
Like anything else, you do it so many times, it's sort of what you do, you know. That's the way I see it.
Yeah. But, well, like, you know, people frown a lot. Does that mean a certain kind?
No, sometimes with the frown, you just got, if you see a lot of sadness, you're, I mean, I can pretty much look at a person and know what their issue is, you know, just the way they feel. I get a lot of, I want to say vibratory energy. I'm very much a medical intuitive. I always have been. I can almost look at somebody and feel where the hurt is if they have it.
Uh-huh.
But when it's heartache, I feel it the most. I can feel it. And I don't know why, but it's empathy.
That's different than the cards, but
right.
You probably use it with the reading also.
Absolutely. I pull in the tools, I believe, of intuitiveness.
Yeah.
And body art, body language, and it's the eyes. It's the eyes. And then I kind of use, I have a gift, I guess, that I think is a little bit more than some people have. I just can feel people, and I've always been able to do that, and I thought everyone could do that. I didn't know they couldn't.
Yeah.
Well, they probably can. They just don't.
But do you use that intuitive about the medical? Do you put that in with your readings also?
Sometime when I look at a reading, there was a blurb that we didn't have room to publish. It was about one of my clients. She's in a nursing home. She's a dietitian. Lovely girl, queen of wands. She'd do anything for anybody. I say the wand people. They're everybody's favorite. They're the healers, the caretakers, the nurturers, the teachers. You know, the earth people.
Yeah.
They come directly from the hands of the creator. And this woman had been coming to me for years, and she said one day I looked at her cards and I was kind of upset because there was an empress reversed. You look at empress and you look, there's a little female symbol. You know, the circle with the cross on her.
Yeah.
She can represent fertility. She can represent pregnancy. She can represent mother. But on top of that was the Ten of Swords. Well, that made me upset because to me it said, in the female reproductive system, there is a very big problem.
Oh.
So, I mean, I don't scare anyone. Like I said, it's in the delivery. And she doesn't mind if I use her name. I said, Marilyn, I want you to do something for me. I want you to go to your gynecologist. I said, when was the last time you'd been there? And she says, when Donnie was born, that was her son, and that was 20 years prior. I said, please go, please. And she goes, you're scaring me. I said, I'm not scaring you. I'm telling you, this card doesn't feel right. I said, you haven't been for 20 years. Go get checked. It can't hurt anything.
Yeah.
Well, she had cervical cancer.
Oh.
And she called me 2 weeks later, and she said, if it hadn't been for you telling me that, she said, I would not have known, you know. And she went, and it was cleared up. And I've done a lot of that kind of stuff. It doesn't happen very often. One of the things I notice the most is that most people are very healthy. And, you know, they might have the twinges and aches and pains of age. You don't see a lot of serious issues. But I always believe the tarot tells them to you with plenty of time to fix them.
Yeah.
They're an oracle.
Okay, well, I'm watching the clock. Give the people a way they can contact you if they want to have a reading. I know you don't have to worry about having clients. You have lots of business.
Right.
But if somebody wants to contact you.
Okay. What I would be more interested in people contacting me about is if they would like me to conduct a workshop or
yeah,
a lecture.
Or a class.
A class, a lecture, if they would like me to do a, you know, readings. I can't do more than 6 readings a day. I cannot. It's
yeah.
too draining.
But you're willing to travel. And
I am willing to travel anywhere. And
yeah.
my fees would be my expenses, and then we would negotiate, you know, the prices. I'm not a very high-maintenance person. You know that. You've met me.
Yeah.
I just want to get my message out. I feel I've been given this call to bring the tarot back to what it was, which is not some carnival game, but a source of enlightenment. I'm very tuned into people. I would love to travel and teach. They can reach me through my website, which is www.justineAlesi.com. JustineAlesi.com. Anyone can reach me through there or at my private email, which is JustineAlesi@Adelphia, adelphia.net. And my website is, you know, on the Internet. It's linked through your website, too. You could go to Ozark MT and find me.
Okay. All right. Now, I just want to close with a few things about the conference. And we're going to put on the first Transformation Conference here in Fayetteville, Arkansas, at the Clarion Inn. and it's going to be June the 3rd and the 4th, and we're going to have all our wonderful authors are going to be there, and the keynote speaker is going to be the grandson of Mahatma Gandhi. So this is going to be a very good conference, and I don't think I'm saying that out of ego, because of those of you who have been listening have got a taste of some of the people who will be there and be lecturing, and it's going to be very good. All right, and if you want more information about the conference or about any of the authors and their books, you can call 1-800-935-0045. 1-800-935-0045. Or check on our website, www.ozarkmountain, it's abbreviated, ozarkmt.com. Okay, thank you.
Could I also add that to contact me, they could as well do it through Ozark Mountain?
Yeah, we can, there's a link. Okay, thanks for coming on the show tonight.
It's totally been my pleasure, Dolores. You've been a wonderful, wonderful publisher. I want to say that so the whole world hears it. She does everything to make you happy.
Okay. All right. Well, now we're going to have to stop because he's going to pull the plug.
Okay. Thanks, Laura.
All right.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Good night.